will increase your efficiency 20% if you learn to do the tough things first, the ones you don't want to do.
Ray Zinn now imparts his management philosophy in Tough Things First. In this series, Zinn covers it all, from the essence of human happiness.
If you're going to make it a consistent practice of working Saturdays just because you think you've got to work 80 hours a week to be successful, you're just flat out wrong.
To the downside of venture capital.
People said, well, don't sweat the small things. Well, I guarantee if you don't sweat the small things, the big things are going to become a mess.
And the essence of entrepreneurial discipline.
Don't want to wait until you jump off the cliff to grab a parachute.
Now here's Ray Zinn, Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO.
Hello, everyone. This is Ray Zinn. I am the author of Tough Things First and the host for this podcast series that we're going to do on the history of Silicon Valley. And I'm just delighted to have my pal and good friend, Peter Marchetti, as my guest today. Hello, Peter. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Ray. Thanks again for having me. Looking forward to another podcast.
Yeah, so Pete's a real an enthusiast of Silicon Valley and its history and kind of what's happening in the Valley and the changes that are taking place. And, Pete's an investment counselor, advisor, a banker. And so he's very interested in how Silicon Valley happened and where is it going. So I'm delighted to have Pete with me today. He's a MBA graduate from UC Berkeley. No offense on that one, Peter. Hi. So, again, welcome, Pete. Thank you for joining us. So today, what we're going to cover is that period, basically from the time that Bob Noyce and company left left Fairchild to form Intel, because of a whole bunch of things that surrounds that time period. We're going to try to cover up to 1980. So that's the thinking for today. So with that in mind, Pete, where we left off is Bob Noyce and Gordon Moore and company leaving Fairchild and going to Intel. The purpose of that, of course, is they were trying to form a more of a computer-related company. And so Fairchild had a lot of discretes, such as diodes and transistors and things like that. And so Intel was not going to go there. They were going to focus more on very complex microcircuits, as you would. And at about the same time frame, a number of other folks began to enter the picture, and a great surge in semiconductor manufacturing, or at least in startups, began to happen in about the same time period. Many of the ones that left the Shockley and start off in different directions, forming companies like Raytheon Semiconductor, Amelco, Teledyne Semiconductor, Advanced Micro Circuits, AMI, and then Advanced Micro Devices and National Semiconductor. So a whole bunch of companies started forming in about this same time frame. So what happened was Fairchild was kind of the darling, kind of the golden boy of the 60s, and most of the products that were being built in semiconductors were for military, because the military could afford the price associated with these very high-priced semiconductors. For example, a plain transistor back in the 60s would sell for hundreds of dollars, maybe even thousands of dollars, and so they were making all kinds of really complex hybrid type circuits, and those were basically circuits are made on a ceramic substrate, and then they put these little transistors around in an array like a PC board, and so they were very expensive, and so the military was the primary driver for the products, and they could afford very very high prices, and so good margins, and really, we have to thank the military, the Defense Department, for the U.S. for really paving the way for the advancement of semiconductor technology and for the advancement of Silicon Valley. And so it's really, you know, the U.S. Defense Department that really paved the way. And then a lot of other companies started springing up, mainly again to do military type products. But Intel, when they formed, that really began the era of the computer technology or the computer industry, at least from the standpoint of power, computing power. Just jumping back a little bit here, at the time that Gordon Moore and Bob Noyce left Intel, there's another group of guys. You had Charlie Sporck, and he was a manufacturing guru. He was a real tyrant and, you know, keeping costs down, and he was good manufacturing guy. He was the ops general manager for Fairchild back in the 60s. And so he left and took a bunch of manufacturing type guys with him, and they formed a company called National Semiconductor. Again, it was a company that's National was already a company that existed, but not as in semiconductor, but that was the host company, as you would, was National. And so then they formed National Semiconductor out of that group of guys that left Fairchild, again, back in the kind of the late 60s. And they went to a facility over in Kiefer in Sunnyvale, California. And at about the same time, a guy named Jerry Sanders, who was a sales guy for Fairchild. You can see how this is really interesting. You had Gordon Moore and Bob Noyce, which are more highly technical, you know, more of a, you know, the process gurus. Charlie Sporck being a manufacturing guy. And now you have a marketing guy or sales guy, Jerry Sanders, leaving and forming Advanced Micro Devices. And that's interesting because, these guys weren't as technical. They were going to pretty much just kind of copy what Intel was doing. And so that began a long legal battle between Intel and Advanced Micro Devices over patents and proprietary information and so forth. And it was probably the longest and most complex legal battle in the semiconductor industry that's ever happened.
How about as it relates to Fairchild on that? You talk about the litigation between AMD and Intel, but like what was Fairchild's response to all this talent packing up and leaving and starting competitors and take, you know, it's almost like the birth of the Silicon Valley culture where people kind of, you know, start with big companies and then take off and start up their own companies.
Well, yeah, the erosion was happening so fast that Fairchild began a major transformation. They hired a guy named Wilf Corrigan from Motorola to come in and run Motorola Semiconductor and run Fairchild. And so you had the talent pool, as you would, was basically off that Shockley group. And then with all those folks leaving and going to their different companies, that left Fairchild kind of up in the air. So a major transformation took place at Fairchild, becoming more like a Motorola type company. And that was interesting because of the culture of the Valley was more centered around the Shockley guys, as you would. And then when the Motorola folks took over, then it looked more like the people down in Arizona, you know, where Motorola was. So, but the interesting thing, there was just very few semiconductor companies in the prior to 1970, but you know, in that 1970 era, there began to be a real, growth than you would in the Silicon Valley for semiconductor companies. I mean, there were so many Nortec Electronics. There was Sprague had kind of moved a group into the Silicon Valley. You know, there's a bunch of guys out of Westinghouse. They were all kind of trying to jump in, but they all, rather than stay where they were in their respective locations, they moved to Silicon Valley. And I thought that was interesting.
Well, in fact, I think we talked about it on our last podcast. That was, it was what, 1972 or so, that Silicon Valley actually gained its name, right? Like right. From all these upstarts, all these spring-offs from Fairchild.
Exactly. So the Silicon Valley, you know, explosion really began in the early 70s. You know, there were very few semiconductor companies prior to that, which is obvious. Anytime the industry starts up, there's not very many in it. So the other interesting note is that the customer, mainly the military, became less important as we moved in through the 1970s. That a lot more consumer applications sprang up. National began producing calculators. TI started producing calculators. Hewlett Packard started producing calculators. In fact, I was in the early 1970s, I was involved in designing the first one chip calculators. It's a form function calculator, but it was a little thing about 8 inches square and about 2 inches thick, and it had a power cord. And I thought it was really neat. You could carry around this calculator in your briefcase. Whereas before we had these big Marchant mechanical calculators and went clackety, 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 clackety. And that's how that we did the, you know, did our computing was on those mechanical calculators. So when we did the one chip, four function calculator, that was a big deal. And so there began to be a real explosion of consumer electronics, you know, as I said, digital watches, calculators, you know, the whole form of consumer electronic type devices, you know, the Pong, Atari Pong, you know, the first video game, as you would, those all began to come into being in the 1970s. And so the 1970s was really the revolution and really the takeoff of semiconductors. That's when it all began to happen, because we went from basically just a handful of companies in the 60s to, you know, close to 100 in the 1970s. So you can see it was like an explosion. The industry grew like, you know, 10 times or more, 20 times. And so that's why Silicon Valley began to really prosper, was because of that dynamic growth that took place in the 70s. And almost every company started producing their own semiconductors, like Hewlett Packard, Compu, whatever, forgot the name of that company, but you know, Varian. So many companies started doing. You know, IBM, of course, started producing their own semiconductors, and AT&T. So you just had an explosion of semiconductor technology products. Even Japan started getting into manufacturing semiconductors, and Europe, Siemens, SGS Thompson. You know, had a number of European companies started producing semiconductors. So it was in the.
I was going to ask you, Ray, sorry to interrupt. I was going to ask you, with all this amazing growth that's happening here in the Valley and then elsewhere as it relates to semis, where was most of the talent coming from? Because with all these companies starting up and you need a lot of engineers to make it work, how were people being found and where were they coming from to kind of fill all those positions that were needed?
Well, there's a lot of excitement in Silicon Valley. So people just started flooding in there. I mean, people from all over the world, you know, almost every country in the world even started, you know, pouring into India, Indonesia, Japan, China, Korea, Taiwan, France, Germany, Italy, Norway, all of them started, we had just a tremendous number of foreign countries that were, pouring people into the valley. And that also started causing problems because all that intellectual property now is being spread around the world because these people would leave and they'd go off and form other companies or go back and work for like Siemens or somebody in NEC in Japan. So a lot of that technology started just leaving. Toshiba started getting involved in semiconductors back in the early 70s. And they actually formed a semiconductor company right across from my company, Micrel, back in the early 70s. Maybe it's a good place to break, Pete, in this segment and then go on to our next segment next time. So again, thanks for joining us today. We're going to do a whole series on Silicon Valley. Hopefully you all enjoy it as we talk about Silicon Valley and its formation and where it's in its transformation. Again, we're going to have to rely a lot on my memory. So I apologize in advance for any incorrections of things that I say and do that are not exactly perfect as you would, because we're talking, almost 60 years of history here that we're going to cover.
So I would say all in all, your memory, it may not capture everything to the fact, but it's been pretty amazing that you can recall as much as you do, considering how long ago it was that a lot of the stuff took place and the details that are involved. So you're doing a good job.
Well, thanks, Pete. And join us for our next in this series of Silicon Valley History Podcast. And we'll look forward to talking to you again. Again, this is Ray Zinn, your host for today. You can follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook. And also our website, toughthingsfirst.com. Pick up my book, Tough Things First. Also my new book, Zen of Zen, which you'll find in all your favorite bookstores, Amazon, and so forth. Okay, thank you, and we'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to Tough Things First, candid talk with Silicon Valley's longest-serving CEO, Ray Zinn. Drop by the contact page at toughthingsfirst.com for more about the book, more podcasts, and links to Ray's Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn pages to keep up with Ray Zinn's wisdom daily.